A quick word from our sponsor. Are you having trouble getting your design system to work for everyone in your business? Well, with Zero Height, you can have a central place where designers, engineers, product, brand, content folks, they can all come together and they can talk the same language to make your design system as successful as it can be. From documentation to token management to governance features, Zero Height is the most robust design system tool on the market today. And you can try it out for free at zeroheight.com. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Design Systems Beyond the Button, where we dive into everything related to design systems for everyone from newbies to seasoned practitioners. I'm Neff, Product Marketing Manager at Zero Height, and I'm excited to use this podcast to get my burning design systems questions answered. I'm joined by my colleague, Michelle Chin, a design advocate who has seen and experienced so much around design systems.
And I'm looking forward to sharing the tips, tricks, and experiences based on what I've done, but also from what I've seen other design system teams do. So there's not really much being said publicly about design systems because they can be so personal to a company. And we thought this might be a great way to share some insight so you can create your bestest design system ever. And today we have a special guest, Robert Woodfield. Rob is a product designer on the team that worked on our design tokens manager and revamped the style guide theming. Plus he works on the design system here at Zero Height and loves everything token related.
Thanks. I've got a bit of a reputation internally about just being the tokens person, which I don't know if is a good thing or a bad thing, but yeah, really excited to be getting a chance to dive into tokens with you both today. And yeah, share a bit more about some of the things we've learned from working on a design token manager, as well as things we've learned through research with design system teams. You know, we always kind of out there trying to learn from what other teams are doing. And I think it's a great opportunity to share some of those learnings as well.
All right. So it is probably obvious by now that we are talking about design tokens today. They've been a hot topic since Gina Ann coined the term. Last year, Figma launched variables, which are kind of their version of tokens. Token Studio has been hot for a long time. And the latest How We Document report, which will be available in the next couple of weeks, shows that 56% of teams are using design tokens. That means that the majority of us are using them, but there still is a long way to go. So we're going to talk about some of the best practices. Of course, I'm going to ask loads and loads of questions. And this time I have two victims to answer all of the questions that I could possibly have about design tokens. For those of you who are joining us live, remember that we also have the chat button open on the webinar room. So we'll also get an opportunity to answer some of your questions as we go on throughout today's webinar and podcast. But before we dive into like the super, super complex questions, I thought I would start with something real simple. What even are design tokens, Michelle?
Yeah, I think that's like the great question is, you know, I think people have different definitions. So a lot of people say they are a design decision, but I think when you're trying to understand what tokens even mean, to understand like it's a design decision, like what does that even mean? Like it's just too abstracted. So I think there's a couple ways to think about it. Like I think of it as like a shorthand of, you know, what of encapsulating like a definition, like a series of decisions. So like color, you know, border radius, all sorts of things, size. So it's like a short code that people can read and kind of get a gist of that represents a lot of other details that could change. And I was talking to someone who likened it to like the index at the back of a book. So if you go to a book and you go to the back, there's all these like terms and all those terms will stay the same. But it doesn't matter like what's in the beginning part of the book, the actual content, like during like the editing process or revisions, there could be several paragraphs added, deleted, removed, words changed, that type of stuff. But as long as that index is there, you'll know where to go reference those details. So that's kind of one way of thinking about it. I don't know, Rob, if you have another way or if there's things that I might have missed in that oversimplified version definition, I guess.
No, I think that's a very, very concise definition. I did a presentation to some of our product team last year about design tokens and really struggled to kind of nail down, like, how do you explain this to people who maybe aren't familiar with kind of color styles or CSS variables? Because all of the writing typically comes from that space of, hey, you know what this thing is. It's like this, but slightly different. I think the one thing that I always kind of lean on is it's about turning very common elements into pieces of data. Like that idea of, you know, one of the reasons why people use the JSON format is making it something that can just be used in different places and kind of making that data agnostic to different platforms, to different tools. And I think that is, like, we'll probably get into this a bit later, I think a really key thing about what makes a design token specifically a design token as opposed to, like, a variable or a color style.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you said that, Rob, because at least from where I sit, only being in this world for the last year and a half or so, it seems like often the benefit of design tokens is bridging the gap between design decisions, whether a design token is actually a good representation of that or not, and what happens over in development. Can y'all sort of explain a little bit about how that happens? Like, how do design tokens actually bring developers and designers closer together? Or maybe they don't. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think for me, again, it comes back to that point of design tokens being data. You know, part of the work process that comes from figuring out your design tokens, figuring out the naming, is kind of trying to think end to end about, you know, not just how do I represent this thing in Figma or in Sketch, but, you know, how does an engineer use this? What do they refer to this thing as? And what kind of elements do they actually need access to? You know, it isn't just defining a base color palette. Like, it is about how do you define that for a bunch of different you know, border radiuses, for border strokes, for textiles, all that kind of thing. So I think what I really like about tokens is it encourages you to start to get out of your silo and really starting to speak to other people around the business and think about how this information flows between different parts of the sort of product design process.
Can you define that? Like, what is the life cycle of a token? So if we imagine that maybe it starts in some sort of design tool, and that is like the infancy of a design token, what does adolescence look like? When does it get to adulthood? Or maybe that's just a poor analogy, but what does that look like?
I don't know, because a lot of teams I speak to, at least, I guess the infancy is token starting in design tools. Now, that could just be the nature of teams that we speak to a lot at Zero Height. But typically, a lot of people I've spoken to, at least, have always kind of seen design tokens start in the design tool. They're defined by this kind of, you know, as so Michelle said earlier, like, design decisions that are being made by teams to say, this is our brand color, this is the color that represents an action. And you start to codify things in that sense. And then when it moves into code and it's being used and kind of aliased and referenced, that's when I think it's starting to get to maturity. I think it's less, though, about which platforms it's on and more about the level of definition. I think if we think back to before we were talking about design tokens, we were still using things like color styles, like CSS variables, but they were very locked into a single space. You know, you might have a bunch of color styles within Figma that are kind of loosely defined. You maybe have, you know, a handful of them, but they cover a bunch of different needs. It's when you start getting into thinking about them semantically or even at a component level and starting to think about how you can create, you know, a base token in one place and then have that reference and propagate through a system and think about how it scales. I think that's where you start to get into the maturity of the design tokens process.
Yeah, I think that scalability is kind of where the tokens start to really shine. Like, I think because it can be really complicated to set up and make these decisions and for it to grow. But like once you have that base kind of built, the idea of it scaling for other teams to use. So especially if you support different products or platforms, so maybe you have like an iOS app and a Android app and a web app, and the way it, and if maybe even if the web apps you have are coded in different code bases, you can then apply the same like styling decisions, like those design decisions, across at scale without having to do a lot of work, which is really, really nice. It saves a lot of time, but it also ensures consistency. And I think it's also depending on how things, you know, are set up. You can even make it more communal based. So like, you know, an Android developer can code the tokens because it's being coded in JSON, and you know, it doesn't have to weigh in, like be done by a certain like one or two individuals or something like that, right? Like it scales, there's a lot more flexibility involved. So I think that's like where it can really shine and really make relationships between design and dev like really cohesive.
Totally. Rob, I noticed that you talked a little bit about sort of the beginning of design tokens. So pre maybe even defining them, where there were styles and there were CSS variables and that sort of thing. And we talked at the top of the podcast about Figma releasing this concept of variables last year at Config. And are variables in your mind the exact same thing as design tokens? And if they aren't, what are the nuances that are actually important for folks as they try to implement these things into their design systems and into their product development cycle?
Yeah, I guess I was kind of expecting this question. But I guess Figma variables, I think, is a step towards design tokens, but I think there are quite a few caveats with them at the moment. You know, a big thing being that they just don't support the full sweep of what design tokens can support. You know, they are focused largely on single value elements, things like color, sizing and spacing. They don't really cover things like typography. They don't cover any kind of like, I believe they don't cover like gradients and things like that as well. So there's a bunch of stuff that they just don't support right now. But also I think the way that Figma are using variables also covers a bunch of different use cases that I wouldn't typically put into the space of design tokens. So a lot of the kind of like Boolean properties that they use variables for in terms of prototyping feels very outside of what you would want a design token to do. So I think they're still very much in that place of you kind of want to be constructing your design tokens from Figma out of variables, out of styles, not just one or the other. I think the other thing as well that kind of complicates matters is getting the variables out of Figma in a way that is usable, in a way that developers can use them, is still a little restricted. Kind of a lot of cases you're going to have to rely on external plugins to get that information, particularly because if you want to be using like the REST API, that's kind of locked to sort of the higher paying pricing tiers, which obviously not every team is going to have access to. And they actually don't yet have kind of, at least as far as I've seen, a neat sort of JSON export. And I think, again, as we sort of mentioned earlier, the portability of design tokens is kind of what makes them really powerful. And I think if you're not kind of supporting that, you're not really working with tokens yet. So like I said, I think it's a step in the right direction, and hopefully they'll begin to add some of that stuff in. I know that typography is something that's on their roadmap, but I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. Michelle, I don't know if there's anything that I haven't covered that would fit in how you see design variables.
I mean, I think that's the thing. I think the cautionary tale here, I think, is like, I think when we saw like a Config and watched the demos and stuff, we were like, wow, this is so cool. And then we wanted to like immediately jump on it right away. I think, you know, looking at that with like bedazzled, like, you know, like eyes were just, it's not fully there yet. And that's okay. Like a lot of software development, you know, only releases partial features until they get more time or they prove that this is a helpful feature. But I think that's the thing is like, I think everyone was really expecting a lot out of the variables. And I feel like, you know, tools really just help us do our jobs more efficiently, but we still have to do that like critical thinking part. And I mean, I think with design systems, especially like we make a lot of design decisions and you hit like a point of design decision fatigue where you're just like, I can't anymore. And I get that. So it would be great if a tool just like magically did everything for us, but unfortunately, that's not here yet. So we still have to do that critical thinking. But that's good. We want to use our brains, right? Like,
And they've been quite clear that, you know, the variables feature is still in beta, like it's not a fully fledged, fully released feature. They've been quite open about what is coming. And I think there's also a lot of unknowns still in the design token space about how we should or shouldn't do things. I think everyone is still really trying to figure this out and pitch a path forward.
Yeah. That's what makes it really hard, is that like, we all know that this is very, like, it could be very valuable, has a lot of potential, but just like we're like in the awkward teenage stage of like trying to like get used to this, but not really, but it's kind of working, but not really, right? Like, so maybe, you know, in a couple of years, like, this totally won't be a problem. We'll look back at this and laugh, maybe.
Rob, there was something you said that I want to revisit. You talked quite a bit about the portability of design tokens as being something that makes them powerful, and almost insinuating that if design tokens aren't portable, they perhaps aren't very useful. I know that that was something that you had to think quite a bit about as you were helping to design and build the Design Tokens Manager. Can you talk a little bit about some of the assumptions that you all made about how folks would be using design tokens, and about like what that Design Tokens Manager needed to do in order to ensure that design tokens were both functional, portable, and were going to lead to this scalability impact that we've talked about thus far?
I guess assumptions is an interesting one. We always try to, you know, challenge whatever assumptions we might have. But I think, you know, taking a step back, I mean, we talked about this when we launched the feature originally. This is kind of our third attempt to sort of do tokens within Zero Height. Our first couple of attempts are much more focused on just spitting out a JSON file that people could use or get into, say, style dictionary. And for this time, what we really wanted to do was offer different ways of getting content in that wasn't just pulling it from a design tool like Figma or Sketch, but being able to maybe take it from the code base directly, or even just from a pre-existing JSON file. And then also try and think about the different ways in which people might want to then use those tokens, whether that is to set up an actual workflow to go from a design tool out into a format that can then be used by developers. So, you know, having that link from, say, you know, pulling in Figma styles at the time, outputting them into style dictionary formats that could actually be used by developers in the code base, to just actually providing better ways to document stuff. Because a lot of what we had previously was so, you know, JSON focused, which great, a lot of the spec is built around a JSON file because it's a very easy to read format for a lot of different tools. But for people, it isn't very readable. And if you want to show people like what your tokens are, how they should be used, you kind of need a richer view for that. So another big step for us was just thinking about different ways that we could present that. And I think the benefit we had was a lot of people had already looked at different ways of doing this. We had teams in Zero Height who built their own workflows to create tokens tables and things like that. So we could look at what our customers are already doing. We could look at what other design systems, like public-facing design systems, have done, and sort of, you know, think about how we could then bring that into Zero Height and make that easier for other teams who maybe didn't have the resources to build that stuff themselves. So those are kind of the things that we're really considering and thinking about. And also, yeah, like I say, just thinking about the broad spread of different tools that we might be kind of pulling design tokens from and pushing them back out to at the same time.
And Michelle, I know that you weren't quite involved in that process, but there is a pretty robust conversation happening right now in the chat that was started by another Rob, who is talking about not wanting to use Figma plugins because it might require a robust security process. It makes the design system team reliant on yet another tool, and lots of other reasons why relying on Figma, a plugin, plus additional tools that already exist might not be an ideal scenario. Is there any advice that the two of you might have for how folks sort of allow this transition to happen without bogging down the team with lots and lots of tools and lots of process that might not necessarily be the most easy thing to continue with? Michelle, maybe I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think this is a really, I think that this is also what makes tokens and everything so, every design system team so unique, that you can't really give like a one size fits all solution, because you'll run into like security issues or cost and budget and just even different like teams and different code bases, all this, like it just starts to get where you have to craft like a solution that is so unique to your organization. I think that's the thing. I think so. I was at an organization that with security protocols, we weren't allowed to get any Figma plugins. And then we could make our own Figma plugins, but then we didn't have a dev that had time to make Figma plugins. So really, it was not the best situation. I think one thing I would recommend is, like, I get how hard and frustrating that can be, but it can take a mental toll if the attitude with the team is like, oh, like this stupid company and their security protocols, like, oh, we can't use these plugins, like, and just like missing what you don't have can be really toxic and really frustrating to finding a way to do this. So I think the biggest thing is to like think more positively. I know it can be hard, but like, you know, what can you do to with what you have to make things easier that would, you know, make things happy, like make everyone on the team happy as they can be, right? With your constraints. And that also opens it up to like speaking with your developers, your designers, both from people who are working on the design system, but also who are consuming the design system, to see like, you know, what would work best for them, and see if you can come up with a solution together to see what that workflow can look like, because it can get really frustrating. But I think the thing is, like, there's also a lot of coordination that needs to happen anyway if you're going to talk about design tokens. Like it, like what Rob said earlier, it's, you're not, you know, it's a good chance for you to break out of silos, because a design team can't just start defining tokens and creating the naming convention and then, you know, handing it off to a developer and go, hey, knock yourself out, we made tokens. I know that from experience. So like, I was on a design system team that, as a side project, we're like, we'll just make some tokens. And then we like did all this thinking and naming and defining, and we showed engineering and they're like, we can't use any of this. We were like, what? So part of it's because they had certain things in place already within their code that made it so they couldn't easily adopt tokens the way that we had created them. So it was a very big lessons learned around like, okay, we should have spoken with you earlier to kind of see what we could do. And that happens regardless of tool. So you don't have, this is tool agnostic. This conversation has to happen. So I think while you're doing that, you can have a conversation of like, what does that look like when we do implement a workflow?
Totally. And Rob, any thoughts there?
I guess coming back to, you know, one of the concerns around using specific plugins or tools is, you know, how long they'll be supported and also getting like locked into particular things. And I think, and one of the things that we were quite keen to do when we built the token manager was make use of the design tokens community group specification, which we think is a really great sort of initiative to try and align a bunch of different tools and makers around a standard for the JSON format of tokens. And for me, I think like what's really powerful about that is making it so that you can very easily move those tokens from one tool to another, from, you know, like the format we use could be the same as another tool, which means you're not locked in to any one place if, you know, it's not suiting your needs or there are particular challenges, or maybe, you know, you're looking at something as a stopgap until you get that kind of executive buy-in to get the plugin that is necessary. I think also coming back to, you know, this sort of Figma thing, I think the reason why there was a lot of excitement around variables and what they were doing there was unlocking that ability within the platform itself and not having to rely on plugins to support that is obviously a big factor in that. But I think, like Michelle says, it's going to come down to what your team needs. And I think you can still have those important conversations and you can still be thinking about things in that kind of tokenized way, even if you don't necessarily have the full setup that you need and the workflows you need in place. You can at least start to, you know, build alignment on naming. You can still begin to think about what actually is important to be, you know, codified in your like token set, even if you're still separating things out by having to manually write stuff in, you know, CSS variables or in your code base or in the kind of, you know, Figma styles or variables that you're using in the design team.
Sure. It almost sounds like for some teams, they might be able to get some of the impact and benefit of design tokens, but perhaps would not be ready for everything that is possible with fully implementing design tokens. Is it also fair to say that there might be teams who shouldn't be using design tokens at all? I suppose the question here for both of you, Rob and Michelle, is like, should we all be using tokens? Is there ever a reason why a design system team might say, you know what, tokens aren't for us? Michelle, maybe we'll start with you.
I think, so it's a typical designer answer, it depends. I think it'd be great if everyone could use tokens, right? It makes things so much easier. But I think the only times people wouldn't want to use tokens is if they have something that's set up, or their products are really, they've been around for a while, that they might not be able to use tokens out of the gate immediately, or be able to use tokens for everything or every product. So I think it's one of those things. It's like, if looking at your long-term product strategy, if it's something that is worth building in to any net new products or features and slowly evolving, maybe that's where you stand. Or maybe it's like, this is going to be too difficult, it's not worth it. We are a very established product, we have established code bases and everything else. Then it might not be worth the effort of putting in tokens, because depending on how the code is architected, the resourcing priorities, that type of stuff. So it's mostly for me, it'd be mostly if you have an existing product that is very mature, you might not want to add tokens, which is my take. But like, if you're brand new, and I think that's kind of what the Howie document survey reflects, which everyone will see in a couple weeks, that like younger design systems are adopting tokens quicker. And that's because they're kind of starting from an earlier place where they can leverage tokens quickly versus some established, more established systems. Yeah, I don't know, Rob, if you have any other thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, like, as you said sort of earlier, design tokens really excel when you're operating at scale, right? When you're kind of managing different products, different platforms, different themes, even beyond kind of thinking of, you know, light and dark mode, but thinking of different sort of spacing, or even, you know, back office and, you know, sort of front-facing, customer-facing products. Like, tokens really sing at that point because it makes things so much easier. The problem is that often when you're at that point, you don't have tokens set up, and it's really tricky and very costly to invest in that. And I think what we've seen a lot in the research we've done is the teams that have managed to do that well have often been going through a rebrand, have been going through some form of platform modernization, and folded the design tokens initiative into that work, because it just becomes a much more understandable part of the flow, and it sort of helps to mitigate some of that cost. So I think that's definitely one thing to think about if you're kind of at that size. On the flip side, you know, smaller teams, it's really encouraging that smaller teams, newer teams are adopting design tokens early, because I think there's been some writing in the past saying, like, hey, if you're a startup, you don't need design tokens. You don't need a fleshed out like design system even. You know, you're a small team, it's like one designer, six engineers, you're building stuff, you're getting it out there. But I think actually that's the point where you should at least start to think about some of this stuff and start to lay some of the groundwork, even if you're, again, not investing the time to go and get like a bespoke, you know, tokens workflow, or like, you know, get a token management platform to help deal with that. If you're, again, still working very manual with spreadsheets and that kind of stuff, at least have those conversations, at least start to think about how this stuff could potentially, you know, grow over time. You don't need to be thinking necessarily about how you're going to support Android if you're only on iOS right now, but at least think about, you know, making sure you're not kind of locking yourself into stuff too early, I think would be the main thing.
Yeah, it's like really about getting into that like mindset of like, what would tokens look like and evolve, like how would we evolve our token approach as we're building, you know, our new product or new feature or, yeah, just getting into that like mindset. Cause I think that's kind of like what's going to be most helpful because there is a lot you have to think about when defining in it. And if you're keeping that, you know, in the back of your mind, even if you're not doing it now, you'll know as you're adding more things, you're like, actually, you know, I think we're at a good point where we can start like defining some color tokens or defining some, you know, size tokens or something like that. And introducing it and taking a very like, you know, iterative approach to it. Like it doesn't have to be, we need all the tokens defined and created before we can start designing. Like no one's ever going to go with that. And you'll never get your product off the ground. Cause I think that's the other thing. Tokens are challenging. But if you have that mindset, it can be much easier.
Yeah. And a lot of the teams that I've spoken to, at least in, you know, the past sort of 6 months, when we talk about tokens, you often find out this wasn't their first go around at doing it. You know, there have been other attempts, whether it's just one attempt before or a couple. And each time you're learning something new and each time you're making that process easier for the next time that you're going to have to do it, because it is difficult. You know, you're not going to get everything right first time. As you say, every business, every team is different. And part of it is figuring out like what is unique and specific to you and what is important to you as well. You know, you don't have to go and cover every possible token that you need. You might just need to focus on colors. You might just need to focus on type. Like, as with all design system things, it's about, you know, picking the right thing to focus on at the right time and getting that done, proving that value, building that out and growing the initiative kind of more organically, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny, like you mentioned how it's like a lot of times it's not companies' first times like creating tokens. I feel like that's the way it was, like it is with design systems too, except I think we're a lot further along in that. Like, you know, so many teams that you would talk to, you'd be like, oh yeah, this is like our third or fourth time of trying to start a design system or, you know, do something different with a design system. So it's kind of like that iterative approach. Like there's going to be a lot of restarts. And I think, you know, let's not beat ourselves up if we are restarting quite a bit. I think that's the thing, is like, it's going to need some understanding to figure out like how everything is architected or could be architected or named before you settle on something really good. And that's kind of how we were with design systems as well. I think we're a lot further along now that we've, you know, a lot of us have been doing design system work for quite some time, and we're not, you know, having to iterate nearly as much, but it is a very iterative process. I think when we look at like a lot of these design token sets that you see in design systems, you're just like, wow, this is so amazing. Why can't we have ours like that? And it's probably because you need to iterate a couple more times. And we don't know how many times, you know, they've iterated and maybe gotten to arguments. I don't know. The drama behind their documentation. We don't know that.
Yeah, you only ever see like the sort of happy ending of a lot of design system stories, right? The very heavily curated, like, oh, here's the happy path, how we got to this beautiful end state, and never the actual, you know, many, many workshops and sort of pulled out hair that happens, yeah, as you're trying, yeah, to corral a design team and an engineering team to adopt.
Yeah, the burnout and despair at times of like, why can't we just name this way? Yeah. to be a fly on the wall for some of these teams. I don't know.
It seems like every design tokens conversation eventually gets back to naming and the perils and how hard it can be to do that. And actually, Ron has a question over in the chat. They said, our dev team is tied to another project right now, which is sad. So can the design team discuss design token naming conventions based on existing design systems like Carbon, Polaris, or MUI? Or should we wait till we talk to engineers? Rob, what do you think? Is it okay to start the conversation, or does everybody need to be involved from the start?
That's an interesting question. I would say, like, if you can get at least one person from an engineering standpoint in the process early, like, that is always going to be super useful. I think if you don't, you have to kind of start with the assumption that things might change and not be too precious about where you end up as a design team if you're kind of taking that route. And similarly, on the development side, if the designers aren't ready for that, like, again, think about it more as like a proposal. Think about kind of testing the groundwork there a little bit. I mean, we're sort of doing something a bit similar at the moment in Interhyte. Like, we're working on revamping our tokens approach, because we've kind of ended up being a little bit separated due to the nature of how our design team and our development team scaled. And so it's being a bit more design driven, but always constantly seeking that input from the engineers as we kind of build stuff out, and particularly the engineer that's been working quite closely with me on the design system. So I think it isn't a blocker, but I think it's more just like being aware that you might have to change things. There'll be things that you maybe don't consider that will need to be part of that process. So I'd say still try and make that first tab. I don't know. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, even if they're tied up, like, see if they can spare, like, you know, one or two people can spare like 30 minutes or, you know, a call once a month or something like that. I don't know how long they're tied up for, but just to kind of have them engaged and like, you know, being able to provide some feedback, because they don't need to sit with you in a room for like weeks on end. Like, I think they just need to be kind of like in the loop and just give you feedback, because they're like, they'll say, hey, think about this, or we won't be able to do that. And that will save you a lot of heartache, because I speak from traumatic experience where we did that without design or engineers, and they said, we can't use any of this. So you don't want to go down that route, even if you have that flexibility mindset in mind, like, because you're just like, we just spent a lot of time and trying to figure this out. So see if you can just like pull the, you know, because I think the other thing is, developers are going to be interested in this, and they're going to want to make their lives easier as well. So like, maybe they can't commit a huge amount of time, but if they can give you like a 30-minute call once in a while, that still keeps them in the loop, and that will make sure that they, you know, understand what's going on for when they do have time to focus on it. And I think, you know, you can use like the token naming conventions and approaches from other design systems, but again, they're all very different for what you might need. So you might not be able to follow them to a T. And I think even when you look at different like token naming conventions and sets, they're not the same. There's like, so it's hard to say like, you know, why they decided one way versus another. And for them, it's very tailored to their products and their teams and their experiences. So I think try not to stress out if you're looking at other inspiration, like, as a, like, I don't understand how this works, and how is it going to work at my team. It's more of like just inspiration of like, oh, they took this approach, maybe we can do that, right? Like, yeah, maybe I'll start a token support group.
I feel like that'd be very, very necessary. One of the things that we did at Derive was, again, like a lot of people, we looked at other design systems. We looked at Polaris, we looked at Pace from Twilio, and really it was just about kind of like, how are they structuring their naming convention? Like, what are the things that they're calling out as important to them? And whilst we then didn't directly replicate any of that stuff, we were really thinking about, okay, how does that reflect for us? Like, what do we want to be specifically calling out? And I can talk to like one of the interesting nuances of Zerohyte is, because we have a heavily customizable product, we need to think about the fact that there's a bunch of parts of the product that Zerohyte as a brand owns and controls the look and feel of. And then there's the actual documentation pages, which we actually want our users to be able to fully customize, to make it, you know, whatever colors they want, and, you know, sort of change a lot of that kind of feel. And that presented a really interesting challenge, because it's like, well, we don't know what those things are going to look like. So we need a way of defining them and also clearly denoting to, you know, the designers, to the engineers when they're working with, you know, these tokens in Figma or in the code base, that this is like a customizable element, and how that kind of interacts with the customization, like UI of Zerohyte itself. So that was our kind of interesting wrinkle as we tried to figure out how that sort of fit and how we kind of structured out those tokens. I do want to shout out, actually, what was really useful for us was, back at Config 2022, Figma kind of announced dark mode, and they did a bit of a breakdown on how they approached the kind of token naming process. And if people haven't seen that, that is actually a pretty interesting video that breaks down again how they were structuring the naming and breaking down like what kind of tokens they were going to need and how they were going to sort of theme those. So there is stuff out there, but it is, you kind of have to go digging for it a little bit.
Yeah, that's actually like one of my favorite talks, is because they walk through the entire process and they talk about like some of the pain points that they hit, which I feel like a lot of people don't often want to acknowledge. So it was cool to see like, okay, this is where they hit some pain points. This is how they recovered from them. This is what you have to think about. And it's a really great thing. So like, even though it's like pre-variables, like it's a really, like you said, like a nice way to see how they approached doing dark mode and thinking about like tokens, right? Like I learned a lot from it. So it's like, yeah, one of my favorite talks for sure. We'll have a link that we'll post.
We've kind of been dancing around a little bit in terms of like design token naming and exactly how folks might approach that. So Michelle and Rob, and maybe I'll start with you, Michelle, if you were starting design tokens for the first time with a team and deciding how you were going to approach naming, what are you thinking about? How do you decide what that ought to look like?
Yeah, I think that's like where the tricky part is. Because if you look at like design token definition, like there's the W3C like working draft where it's like, here's how you structure things. And it's very, you know, it's very like definitive almost. And with like token naming conventions, like there isn't a standard. I think there are a couple good articles on Medium that, and we'll post these in the show notes for you to see, but there's some good ways to think about like what types of tokens there are and how you might want to name them. They're not always perfect and they might be, it really depends on your situation, but those are like good ways you can start. I think the thing is like last December we had a hackathon and we, Luke and I tried to make like a token naming convention thing with AI. And like we spent the 2 days, like 90% of the 2 days, like trying to figure out how you're supposed to like name tokens, and like very little on the AI part. Right. So it's like, that's how like intense it can get. I think the thing is like, you know, if anyone has an information architect on their team or at their organization, which can be pretty rare, maybe you can find someone with information architecture skills. They have a really great like skill set of being able to piece together like or understand items and things and relations to be able to like help you kind of come up with a good structure that people can understand. So that's like I think without having to like reinvent the wheel, like you can find someone that can help kind of comb through a lot of those struggles. I think because like Nathan Curtis, he has like a bunch of design token naming articles and just design token articles. But I think in a previous life, if I'm not mistaken, he did information architecture work. So it's like, that's why it comes so naturally to him. So I think that's the big thing is thinking about that from a structural perspective, but also involving other people in the organization. So like engineers and, you know, that represent different products of like kind of what is important to them. And maybe like that way you can also prioritize like how you might start to name some of these things. Like, you know, oh, if we have to support mobile apps, do we need to define whether a token is for a mobile app or which type of mobile app? Or maybe that doesn't matter. And that type of thing. So getting a lay of the land. I don't think you need to boil the ocean by any means. I think most people have around like 3 to 5 tokens. Most teams are doing that right now. And most people start with 3 tokens. Because I think that's enough to get you to make a meaningful impact, but also see how your token system is scaling a little bit without having to. I think that's kind of like where your work pays off is what I think I'm trying to say. Because I think one token set is like, or one like tokenizing like just one aspect like typography is a good start, but like it doesn't, there's a lot of work behind that and you can't really see how that scales across like other types of tokens you might want to create with like spacing or colors and that type of thing. So starting off with 3 is probably like a good place to shoot for.
Rob, what would be your advice for this team that's starting off?
Yeah, I guess I'll step away from the IA side because I think everything that Michelle said is bang on basically. It's a real IA challenge. For me, like, the thing that I found is actually creating a working space where you can just start to apply stuff without the fear of, like, you know, running it through an entire system. I created a separate kind of, like, shrunk down design system that had a few key components. And as I was, like, working through what the naming would be, started creating those tokens, applying them, and thinking about, like, is this making sense? Because there's one thing, like, looking at the naming as you kind of, like, map it out in, you know, in a whiteboard or in spreadsheets or however you're kind of approaching that that piece. It's another when you start actually applying stuff and you start thinking, okay, if I've got this token that's named this thing and I'm applying it to, you know, these elements, does that make sense? If I'm a designer who hasn't built out the naming conventions, can I find this thing? Like, for me, a lot of the challenge was just trying to think about how do I make these things predictable and, like, readable by someone. And I guess this, again, comes back to that IA challenge, but it's thinking about, you know, when you're in the design tool and you're searching for the right variable or token to use for an input, do you have the ability to find that thing? And that kind of really helped me to sort of break apart, like, the bits of our naming conventions that weren't working and the bits that were, and also encouraged me to try and keep things shorter as well. That was another thing I ended up doing quite a bit. I had some very long token names at first, and I was like, maybe this is overkill. Maybe it could be a lot.
I kind of want to see that now. Yeah, I think that's the thing, is, like, it's kind of like what we, you know, talked about at the beginning of, like, tokens are kind of like a shorthand, like a shortcut to what they are defining behind the scenes. So you should kind of be able to read them a little bit roughly, and know. It's almost like a code or a dialect for design and engineers, because you don't want someone, like, going, like, what is this token, and then having to, like, reference all these things to be like, what is this, can I use this? Like, people should kind of be able to glance at it and, like, roughly understand, like, what it's saying.
As we get close to the end here, Michael shared a pretty hot take in the chat. They said, I think a design system isn't really a system without tokens. Tokens are the language, vocabulary, etc. of a system. Without them, we're talking about style guides and toolkits, etc. Rob, do you think that there is validity to that? Are tokens the sort of lifeblood of a design system?
I would probably disagree. I think ideal world, like, again, I think it would be great if we were always building with design tokens first, and, you know, where relevant, and, you know, thinking about how we eventually scale. Because I think a lot of us, you know, when we work in product teams, we want the products we work on to grow and expand and to become successful, and we want to set them up for success long term. And I think tokens is really great for that. I'm always just very hesitant to, like, put a pin in and say, like, this is what a design system is versus this is just a toolkit. Like, if what you have is helping you to work more efficiently and is helping you to deliver, then I think it's doing its job. And I think that design system is the right design system for what you need at that point. I think there's always a bit of a risk to overcomplicate it. And I think that can potentially turn a lot of people away from properly investing in a design system, because they start to think that there's a lot of work that is required. And actually, design tokens might not be solving any problems for you at this point in time. I think it's more just, like, always be aware of it being something you probably need to think about at some point, because you don't want to ever lock yourself into that. You know, if you're starting a product now, you don't want to be locking yourself in 10 years' time to go, well, now we all have all this legacy, you know, cruft to deal with, and we've got to, you know, wait for a big rebrand to now adopt tokens and actually scale, you know, dark mode, light mode, different spacing modes across our product suite. So I think that's my rambling thought on that take.
Michelle?
Yeah, I think kind of to your point, like, however is getting the team able to make things with some efficiency is, like, a design system. Design systems have lots of different parts to them, and you might not have all your parts figured out or they're all working. But yeah, if it's working for you, then great. Because I think it's like, you know, it's like as a kid, you're like still a human, but you're not responsible enough to do everything. But at some point, hopefully you are responsible enough to do more things. Sometimes, not in all cases. But yeah, like I think that's the thing is like you still are a human. You're going to be a human throughout. And hopefully you're building, you know, and learning and not being destructive. I don't know. I'm just thinking of people like kids just driving in cars and they're not ready to. Like, that's why they have to wait till they're like teenagers. But even when they're teenagers, that's still a risk, right? Yeah. I digress, by the way.
Yeah. When you started, I wasn't exactly sure where you were going with that, but I think I've been able to connect the dots. But Michael over in the chat says that they stand corrected. So you all have made a pretty compelling argument for them to come back a bit on that hot take. We only have a few more minutes left together, so I'll end us with just one last question for the both of you. Where do you all see design tokens going in the next decade? And how might we as design system practitioners today facilitate that sort of transformation? Rob, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, I guess I'm really excited to see where things like the community group specification goes. There's a lot of stuff that is still kind of undefined in that spec, and that is causing, I think, a bit of friction in the design token space. The fact it doesn't really cover kind of theming or modes is, you know, a bit of a contentious point, and it's why some tools haven't kind of fully adopted that specification. I think also there's just so much scope for other things that we could put into design tokens. We talk a lot about color and typography and, you know, sizing to a certain extent because those are the easier things for us to kind of consider. I mean, there's still big challenges. I say easier, and we've just spent, you know, best part of 50 minutes talking about how complicated tokens are. But those are easier to conceptualize, I guess. There is so much more that we could perhaps codified that would be really interesting to look at. I know people are looking at, you know, things like motion and you know, even like, you know, iconography and just a whole bunch of different things that you could turn into data and like pass through the system in that way. I think also there's just, once we start to get those kind of workflows working and operating, thinking about how easy it would be to start to make, I think, you know, this is less a thing that design tokens does for design system teams, but more what it does for consumers. And that's like bringing back more customization. Like if you can start to, you know, create more customizable modes, you could actually start to, you know, bring some real kind of personality and customization back to the web to make things like fit to however a user wants, or whether they want, you know, bigger type or, you know, wider spacing and all that kind of stuff that at the moment has sort of been pushed into more kind of accessibility modes. I think that'd be really kind of interesting and cool to see.
Yeah. I like the idea of thinking like what that could look like for the end user, especially. I think 10 years is like a long time, which is, so like atomic design is like 10 years old as of last year. And so it's like thinking about like where we are with design systems, like we're so much further along, but still so many of us and so many of our teams that we work at, like still have a long ways to go. So I feel like, you know, 10 years from now, there's still going to be a lot of teams trying to still navigate and figure out design tokens. But I think there's so many of us like in the field that if we start working on stuff now, like we'll have a much better understanding to be able to like consult on how that goes. It will be a lot easier. Hopefully there's more tools to support and also more, just more like guidance on how we might want to standardize, like even the naming convention aspect, just to give some people a direction in going. And then probably something with AI, right? Like, we'll see.
a whole lot to think about, and we are actually wrapping up our time together with a few questions left unanswered. Fortunately, there is a forum for us to continue the conversation. For those of you joining us live, I have posted the link to join our Zeros Slack community, where there is an entire channel dedicated to Beyond the Button. So ask your questions there. Rob and Michelle will be around to have a discussion, and hopefully some of us can also join in with ideas and thoughts. And if you're listening to this, the recorded version, we'll have that link down in the show notes for you to ask questions and partake in the discussion as well. We will be back next month, that is Michelle and I, on March 12th at the exact same time for a discussion on how we're measuring the impact of our design systems. So we hope to see you there. And one last time, thank you so much to our special guest for today, Rob Whitfield.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.